Me tuku mihi kia koe. Martin, wonderful to see you. Very busy week.
Very busy week.
Really busy week, even though we're still in lockdown. But, you know, we're in level three now. Some Māori and Pacifica organisations very wary about going to threes, said we should have stayed in four, given that we are the majority now positive cases.
Well, not only that, but I mean, I think the modelling shows us some pretty grim statistics. Even at 80% full vaccination, we're looking at 7,000 dead a year and 60,000 hospitalisations. And we know that that's going to impact Pacifica and Māori more. We know that's going to impact the elderly more. We know that's going to impact the poor more. So this push to get back to the normal, which is driven by the middle classes who have already gotten vaccinated and are tired of their leafy suburbs and wish to go travelling again, it seems that they will be the ones pushing for the reopening of the country, and it's the poor who are going to end up paying the highest price of that.
Yes, indeed. We have seen a ramping up of sorts for testing and vaccinations amongst our communities. In South Auckland, we've got vax buses, you know, Vaximus in West Auckland. We've got Shotcars in South Auckland. We've got Shopro in Papakura. And, you know, slowly our people are coming out and, you know, participate. There has been an increase. We're just over 68% for Pacifica, 50%, over 50% now for Māori. Hesitancy still, this is where they're getting their numbers from. Their 7,500 is amongst, in terms of the calculations. Yeah. This is the modelling. This is where they're getting their numbers from, is from us, those of us that are unvaccinated communities like that. That's what you're saying, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think that there's a chunk of the population out there who are, let's say, ideologically anti-vaxxer. You know, people who feel that there are microchips in the vaccine, that this is being transmitted by 5G technology. People who are who were on the fringes of society to begin with. People who think that crystals will heal you from cancer, that sort of thing. That group has sort of melded with very, very, very reactionary people, particularly amongst the white supremacy movement. And they seem to have sort of all coalesced together in this weird gumbo of ignorance. And I think that for that particular group, look, you're never going to get them to vaccinate. If you believe microchips are in the vaccine, right, despite that being impossible, but if you believe that it's magnetizing your body, you're not going to get a vaccine. But I don't put Māori or Pacifica necessarily in that group. I think that they are a subset or to one side of that group. That group, I don't think, are ever going to get vaccinated. But Māori and Pacifica, look, they have been abused by white Pākehā health for such a long period of time, and by a whole bunch of other Pākehā institutions. You understand why there is a hesitancy. They just don't trust the system at all. That's, you know. So I think that hesitancy you can overcome with actually giving those community groups and those leaders within those groups the resources to be able to reach out and have community organized events to be able to bring people together and to get vaccinated. So I think Māori and Pacifica can get there in terms of numbers. We just have to make sure those communities are resourced enough. The white supremacy, crystals will cure my cancer, it's all a big conspiracy by Big Pharma, that group, they're never going to get vaccinated, because if you believe the earth is flat, you don't fly.
Can I just say this? I believe cancer can help cure. I'm not quite sure about cancer. I like crystals.
Hey, we all love crystals, but I don't think that there's anything that could suggest a crystal would cure cancer. Call me old fashioned.
Yeah, totally. Totally get it. Look, so I just want to talk about Jacinda and the Labor government as a whole. They are becoming so much embedded for me in this whole neoliberal middle class white, to a point that I would never have expected them to drift. I thought they were still the side of center. Really, I did. You know, call me ignorant, but I had a belief that blue were that side of the line, red, yeah, this side of the line. And sometimes National never, you came to the middle, but you never crossed the line. You know? You know what I mean? But I cannot believe just how conservative this Labor government is. And in some of their, you know, their policy, some of the manner in which they're even doing, talking about, you know, business, opening up borders because of business, very much, very conservative in terms of right-wing policy around issues.
Well, I mean,
very similar to Nationals.
Look, the proof is in the bloody pudding, isn't it? You know, 190,000 kids still living in poverty in this country, 22,000 on the emergency housing wait list, entire generations now just locked out of home ownership forever. The issues that matter, Labor's not doing anything on. And I think part of that, or big part of that, is they've just been in COVID mindset for such a long time, trying to keep the country's head above water so that it won't get swamped by that. And every energy, every focus is on that. You do have David Parker, and you've got Andrew Little trying to do some big pieces, the three waters, you're seeing some movement on that. Reform of the RMA, you're seeing some movement on that. And of course, a new Māori health authority, a new public health authority. So there are some big structural things, but in terms of stuff that is happening that is making the lives of the most vulnerable amongst us better day to day, It's all gone out the bloody window, all for COVID response. And this is a major problem in terms of where do we go from once we get to this magical 90% vaccination rate, where do we go to? Because the domestic violence stats are through the bloody roof. Child poverty, sweet Jesus, it's been so hard for so many families who have been locked down, who would scrounge or who would be in survival heads mindset most of the time in just their week-to-week living. Well, being locked down and not being able to go out and try and forage and make their lives a little bit more livable, not being able to do that has made that poverty so much more intense. I mean, we're talking about food banks seeing demand for increase in demand of in the hundreds of percentages, for crying out loud. So what are we going to do once we get out of COVID? We've survived that. We get to the 90% vaccination rate. We can mitigate. We can keep it safe. We can do all of these things. What does the rebuild actually look like for the most vulnerable amongst us? Because if we're not going to do the rebuilding to make sure those vulnerable communities can actually move beyond COVID, then what was the point in surviving COVID for a lot of families, you know?
Well, the thing is, you see, pre-COVID, the Labor government hadn't sorted out poverty, child poverty, homelessness, pre-COVID. So can we really blame COVID for, yes, we can, to a certain point. But for those that are working in the whānau ora space, we are almost we had experienced poverty at an increasingly deep level. We're almost at abject poverty now because of COVID. So the government actually did nothing. What COVID has done is just highlighted the nothing that they had done.
Oh, look, you're absolutely right. The bleeding gums of our inequality have been exposed for all to see. And unless there is a major, major focus on really some large and out of the ballpark ideas in terms of how we're going to move things forward, then this is going to become a legacy of poverty. You know, if we don't do something significant in the next 6 months past the 90% vaccination rate, so once we've got COVID out of the way, if we don't make some significant and radical changes on housing, on poverty, on inequality, you know, this last 18 months will become a blip in terms of deepening poverty that we never recover from.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you know, there are other things happening in the country as well too. We talked last week about Auxis, about the Auxis. You know, is it a big deal? We still seem to be talking about it even more so. Minister Nanaia Mahuta has been talking about it in the House as well too. China's on the loom. Have we been caught between a rock and a hard place?
Well, Auxis coming together the way it did is an incredibly provocative move against China. There's only two reasons you have a nuclear submarine. One, as nuclear deterrence, we'll fire nuclear weapons at you if you fire them at us, or as a first strike capability. And that's how the Chinese are going to see this. 8 nuclear subs armed with what looks like they'll be hypersonic missiles, you could hit China before they even realize what's going on. So they see this as an incredibly provocative move against them. I don't think we want any bar of this. I don't think we want to get trapped or tricked into another bloody American war, and we don't want to fight the Chinese. So I think that where we should be is the one who's constantly calling for peace and constantly calling for talks and constantly saying, hey, we will be a good faith bargainer and a bridge between these crazy white people over here and the Chinese over there, because that's where I think we can really step up as the go-between. But we don't, the last bloody thing we need in the Pacific is an act of war. That's just, and if you listen to how some of the Australian hawks are talking, they've been gifted with the hand of God in terms of having access to nuclear power. And they've all gone a bit loopy, you know? It's almost like they want to start something. And the problem is that even they'll get these nuclear subs in, I think, 2040, but there's a lot of time, a lot of water to go under the bridge before then. And China feels quite angry. I think that what we will see is a major cutback in terms of Chinese ore. They'll take a lot less Australian ore. That's going to put their economy into a bit of a tailspin. And that will also affect us and impact us as well. I think a lot of brothers and sisters who have moved over to Australia to dig iron ore out of the deserts there. I think a lot of them are going to be coming home within 12 months.
Look, what about this Evergrande, the belly up of the building development company in China? I mean, we're talking trillions of dollars here. Is that going to have a ripple on effect impact us here? And what does that look like?
That's an excellent question. I think that what we will see with Evergrande going belly up, and it looks like it's maybe less than a month away from that happening. I think what you will see is there will be a mass liquidation of external Chinese property assets, and you'll see that happening in England, you'll see that happening in Canada, you'll see that happening in Australia, and you will certainly see it happening here in New Zealand. So there will be a sudden glut of housing going onto the market because Chinese investors will just be pulling their money out and taking it home. That's going to lead, I think, to an extremely, quite a sharp drop in terms of the housing prices here in New Zealand that I don't think anyone's prepared for yet. And it means that first-time buyers will maybe finally have a chance of buying a house.
Someone's misery is somebody else's, you know, profit. Hey,
but it'll be interesting because, particularly for the middle classes in this country, they have built their sense of wealth off this illusionary house price of theirs. The second you get a real reduction or a correction there, you watch how their kindness goes right out the window.
Thank you so very much for joining us. Always wonderful to cordial with you. We look forward to next week. Me tuku mai ki a koe.